I couldn't do an office job because I can't sit still, but...
Today's episode of the Ingredients Podcast is brought to you by Tanda, helping the best venues stay ahead. So if you run a great venue but also want to stay compliant at the same time, reach out to the Tanda team at hospitality@tanda.com.au. The links are in the show notes of this podcast. Hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to this episode of the Ingredients Podcast. Today we're here in Finovino, the amazing site in the Adelaide CBD. And we're sitting down with Sharon, who's one of the co-owners of this amazing brand. Now, she's been in hospitality for over 30 years and with Finovino in the CBD, but also in the Barossa, has created an amazing brand and delivers one of the best hospitality experiences in Australia. I think you're really going to love this podcast. Let's get into it. Sharon, thanks so much for joining me on the Ingredients Podcast in your venue,
yeah,
in Finovino.
Thank you.
Why did you choose hospitality to get into?
I chose hospitality. I was thinking about this if this question would pop up, and I guess part of the reason was growing up in a Southern Italian family that is all about hospitality, I guess, without kind of realising it at the time. But, yeah, like it's all about being hospitable and being generous and looking after others. So I guess that's from my family. It's all I've known and absolutely love.
Yes.
I wanted to become a chef.
Okay.
When I was a teenager, and that didn't work out. And then I went back to uni, and to pay for my uni degree, I worked in hospitality.
Right.
And fell in love, and it was something I was really good at.
So you were doing that front of house instead of doing back of house?
Correct, yeah.
Can I ask why the chefing didn't work out? Because I was going to be a chef as well. No, I couldn't get it.
I just had a really terrible experience.
Yeah, right.
I was told that I was too old to employ at the age of 16, and it was a real men's club, and I just didn't feel something wasn't right about it. Love food and love cooking, by the way, but that experience kind of, I think it really kind of took a bit of my self-esteem, to be honest.
I was going to say, like, I'm surprised you even came back.
Yeah.
And did front of house.
I don't know. I can't remember. But I just remember that having a really negative impact on me, and that kind of rejection kind of messed with my state of mind and self-worth.
Yeah.
But I loved the industry at such a young age.
Sure.
And, yeah, I don't know how I fell into front of house. Maybe I was just put in that position and, yeah, really thrived.
What was your first front of house role?
It was at Pizza Hut.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, in about 1988.
God. How did you enjoy those times? Because obviously families are the predominant people that come into Pizza Hut, like very challenging.
Yeah, I loved it. All the friendships that were built, and I still have some friends that from those days. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And have you always lived in South Australia?
Yeah. I travelled for about a year overseas and worked for a little bit, but nothing serious. Yeah.
You never wanted to work overseas and do front of house or hospitality overseas? Like we hear a lot of those stories with chefs who are overseas for years.
I think my world and community were in hospitality, were all in South Australia.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so much so I never needed a resume.
Right.
I just got offered jobs all the time, and it was a really privileged position to be in.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I felt really fortunate.
Were there many places that you got offered roles at that you didn't stay for very long because you didn't feel that they were in good
absolutely.
Places?
Absolutely. But also I was in that kind of, I would stay about a year, but I would just work myself to the bone. Like I would always work 50 plus hours and just get really run down and burnt out, and yeah, and those kind of positions didn't work out. So I think the longest job I've had has been in my own businesses.
Yeah, right.
Which is about to be 20 years.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I won a medal for that.
Does it feel like 20 years?
It feels really weird. And David, my business partner, and I were talking about it recently. It's like, yeah, it is 20 years in March, 2026. Yeah, it feels like a long time. Then it doesn't feel like it's gone that long, but so much has happened.
Yes.
And so much to be proud of. And that we're still here.
Of course.
We're not a new brand.
No.
You know, we're a mature South Australian regional brand.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's amazing.
How did it come to be that you did purchase your own businesses 20 years ago?
I met David Swain in the year 2000 at a beautiful regional beachside restaurant called the Star of Greece.
Right, of course.
And we just got along famously, and there was a lovely connection, worked really well together. And we were both leaving when the Star of Greece was going to close and then reopen in a new as a new venue.
Sure.
So we were there with the dinky, kind of galvanized, beautiful, kind of romantic beachside restaurant on the cliff. It was amazing.
Wow.
And so about 2 years, it was about 6 years after that, that we basically in that time we said, well, maybe we should open up a place, But in that, I just never had the confidence to open up my own venue. So it was kind of David that kind of planted the seed, and then I kind of pushed myself beyond my limits to see if I could do it.
Sure.
But you got to do it with the right person.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. And he had that maturity. Like he's older than me.
Yeah.
Not that that should matter, but he lived in Melbourne and come back and had a young family, and he knew what he wanted.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I really wanted.
Right. Why?
Don't know. All I knew at that time was that I loved what I did.
Mm.
But I never had the confidence to open up my own place.
What did you love about it?
Which bit?
About hospitality in itself. Like you're saying you love it. Like what did you love about it the most?
Making people feel special, making a difference for an hour or two, making an impact, giving people what they wanted. Creating beautiful memories, I guess, for people.
Love it.
Yeah.
So then you've met David, you've known him for 2 years, and then how does it come to be that you buy a business together?
Well, we just were looking around and looking at ideas, and all we knew was that we wanted to open a place that we wanted to eat at and be at.
Okay.
We didn't really know how it was going to look. That's a good start.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he rang me from a telephone box back in the olden days. Yeah. When there were no mobile phones,
yes,
and he rang me about in 2004,
right?
About 4 years later, so we kept in touch.
4 years, yeah.
And he found a little venue in Wollongong.
Yep.
Now at this stage, I didn't really know about Wollongong because I lived in Adelaide.
Yes,
and sure. I would commute to the Star of Greece when I worked there.
Yep.
So he found a place. Asked a friend to help me with a deposit, which he did. And we, gave it a go. And my father, when he was alive, was a cabinet maker. So we had we had family to help us with tables and chairs. And we just basically set it up on the tightest budget. And it was the most beautiful place. So full of soul. Amazing.
I bet.
Yeah.
Can you explain to me how big that venue was?
Yep, it was 30 seats inside and about 30 seats in the courtyard.
Wow.
Yep.
And what kind of cuisine were you doing there from the start?
Okay, so we had this radical idea that we should open with no menu.
Okay.
Yeah. And just cook what was fresh and in season.
Did you get that idea from someone else or did you just come up with that yourself? No,
David was really keen to do that.
Wow.
I wanted to create and curate a list of wines that would excite the winemaker and enthusiast. So I didn't have a lot of wines from that region. So basically our first model didn't work.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. The local, it just didn't work.
People just wanted a menu. They wanted to understand it. Yeah, right, okay. You were too early in that kind of...
Yeah.
Genre of like.
Yeah, I guess
you know,
we were. What we did do were we wanted to kind of have this concept that you would eat at home with friends and family. So share food.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So, yeah.
And how long did it take to know that model wasn't working and then changing that model?
Really, really quickly. You can only cope with so many complaints.
Sure.
It's also just finding out what people are ready for too, and you've got to make them feel comfortable if they're in your home too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And do you feel like that essence of what the brand was 20 years ago is what you're now delivering at Finovino here in the city.
Absolutely.
And also in Shepherdsville.
Yeah.
In what way is it very similar kind of cuisine and style?
It's shared dining.
Okay.
That is produce driven.
Right.
And beautiful, warm hospitality. Same. Same but different.
How long did you stay in Wollonga for?
9 years.
Okay. And what was the decision to exit that business?
Okay, so David and we both live on the Fleury Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
Our first business was on the Fleury Peninsula.
Yep.
We were then invited to be the destination restaurant in the Barossa Valley.
Right. By who?
By Warren Randall, who is the managing director and largest shareholder of Shepherdsville Wine Estate.
Wow. So, did that just come up randomly?
He was a regular customer.
Right.
He's big in the wine community. So, of course, you know, when you own a regional restaurant in a wine region, you know, it is all and only about community.
Mm.
Yes, people that visit the state or visit from Adelaide to dine, but the essence, it's all community and those relationships and how authentic and genuine they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a thing.
Yeah.
And it's a really genuine relationship building place. It's about community.
Yeah.
So Warren would come in often and it basically took us about 3 years to say yes. He's pretty persistent. But he had this amazing vision to turn this village called Shepherdsville back into reality because it was in corporate hands for a long time.
Oh, right.
And it had become this kind of museum in a way.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
How
did you feel from going from a 60-seater site
into
Shepherdsville,
okay,
which is huge? Right?
A lot of stress. Like, insane.
What's that about, 250?
No, we're about
packs?
140.
Yeah. Okay, feels big.
It's massive.
Yeah, right.
I was overwhelmed.
Yeah, right.
I was really overwhelmed and it was really busy and I had a lot of different emotions and feelings. I think the first initial shock for me was its size, but also that no one actually wanted to hear my story about our brand that I've been telling for the last 9 years.
Right.
Because it's a different audience.
Yeah, right.
You're getting, yeah, because when they're in your little 30-seater or 60-seater, you know, everyone kind of knows you.
Mm.
And you've developed, you know, even with customers, it's, you know, hi, Sharon, we don't need to see a menu, whatever.
Right.
So you've gained the trust.
Wow.
But it takes time.
Sure.
It takes time for customers to trust you and your brand.
Mm.
And when they do, they return.
Sure.
And they will always come back because, yeah, they want to have those experiences and share those memories with you.
Of course.
Going to a really busy wine region, people are traveling from around the world that don't know who you are. So I kind of had to let that kind of go.
Yes.
And turn it into a business 3 times the size of my first business to develop consistency, excellent standards for food, delivery and service.
Right.
Which we have.
How long did it take you to figure that out at Shepherdsville?
Oh,
and feel comfortable in that venue that you were hitting what you were at Wollonga?
It's a process too because I wasn't there. I was only there for the first 4 years,
yep,
kind of in a full-time capacity. Also, I was living back here. I was living on the Fleury Peninsula.
Yes.
So I was kind of living out of a
suitcase.
Yeah, yes. For 4 days of the week.
Wow.
And it's really disruptive.
That must be really taxing on you.
It was. And also, you know, there's some family deaths in that. You know, it's never convenient when family members dies.
No, of course.
But I lost my dad and my partner lost her mum in the same year, so in 2015. So, look, yeah, some of it's a blur because you get into survival mode, but you've got to make those decisions really quickly on working out what's good for your business and to get to basically maintain consistency and excellence, you have to really act quickly. And then it's a process.
Yep.
Because it's the people, like we're really, really fortunate in Shepherdsville. We have had staff that have been, we've had staff. I've got a young girl who, well, she was our dishy, right, when she started at 16, she's now just taking her long service leave.
Wow.
That's one of a few that we've had. The retention is amazing.
How do you do that?
Culture.
And how do you build culture here? What's important to you in regards to culture?
Respect, integrity, listening to people. No one's better than anybody else. I always have led by example. I still clean the toilets.
Yep.
Because if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Yes.
And I think culture is really, really important. And I think it's really important that people, no matter what role they play in your restaurant, that they're heard with any concern they have, and that we fix it and we explain and help them understand. So, yeah, it's a really big thing for me. Also, I was treated so poorly in my early years, so poorly, that I just made a promise to myself that if I was ever in a position to employ people or have people under me, that I would never let that happen to them. And I haven't.
Where does that resilience come from? Because you could have gone nuts. Like I said at the start of the podcast, you could have gone nuts. Hospitality is not for me. It's not the environment. I'll go do an office job. I'll go work 9 to 5. I might be bored shitless.
Yeah,
At least I'm not going to be, you know,
yeah,
disruptive.
But I wouldn't.
Right?
I wouldn't. I couldn't do an office job because I can't sit still. But it's just the industry for me. I have deep love for it. I really do. And I guess, you know, only until recently, I've only tried to kind of found my voice. And as a woman back in the 90s in hospitality in South Australia, like, it was a boys' club.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got to speak louder. And I didn't find my voice back then, you know.
Yeah.
And it was pretty hard.
What do you think we are as an industry now with culture for hospitality?
I hope we're better. And I think in a lot of venues it is, but I think we've got a long way to go. And you can just read some recent articles, what's happening in some states, and it's pretty hard to read and stomach that it's still bloody happening today.
I bet you hear some of those stories from your staff for coming from other venues and stuff like that as well, right?
Yeah. 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 I can only employ so many people.
100%. Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
And it's terrible that it's still happening,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. And we hear that every day with the recruitment work that we do as well. Like, it's just awful hearing what happens to people.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's unnecessary.
Mm.
It really is. I'm trying not to use any swear words.
You can swear as much as you like, Sharon.
I don't need
to. This is our podcast today. Let's fast forward to here.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're here in the city.
Yep.
How did it come about that you took on this venue? Because it's such a beautiful venue.
It is. It's really okay. So Fino Wollunga opened in 2006, regional restaurant on the Fleury Peninsula. We then opened a destination regional restaurant in the Barossa Valley.
Uh-huh.
So what I think Fino is a regional brand, and
okay,
very successful.
Yes,
I think we understand regions and connecting to that region and community, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to open a kind of produce-driven venue in Adelaide,
because
mm-hmm, that's what we know. We knew that we weren't reinventing the wheel. We didn't want a themed venue.
Yeah, sure.
We're a mature brand, so we just wanted to bring the concept of community and produce-driven food and our hospitality into the city.
Yes.
Sounds great, doesn't it?
It does sound great.
Great. Shit timing, though.
When you opened in 2019.
Yeah, pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you get through that first year?
You know, resilience. And I think when you are a business owner, for me personally, is I will not and cannot be defeated. You just have to work it out. Something will happen and you've got to work really hard together in your partnership. Now, David and I have been business partners for nearly 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's only never been us.
Wow.
And, you know, sometimes we have our moments, but at the end of the day, we are tight and we are on the same page. And if we're not on the same page, we get there. And yeah.
I was gonna ask, like, how have you made that work for 20 years?
Compromise, like any relationship.
Is there regularity in how you guys, when you talk to each other, in order to make sure the drama doesn't blow up? Like, or do you not talk for like weeks at a time?
We don't have that personality to create
the blow up kind
to
of
create drama.
Yeah, that's
all.
Great. That's good.
Nah, not at all. On the rare occasion, but it's respectful. And that's the thing too, like when you talk about culture, it comes from the top.
Yes.
So if I've got this volatile relationship with my business partner, it's going to filter through.
Mm.
Of course it is. And business relationships are like your personal relationships.
Yeah.
It's a relationship.
Yeah. Does David still live in Melbourne or is he here in Adelaide?
No, he's...
Oh, he's here in Adelaide.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. And we're still owner-operators.
Yeah.
I guess we're less hands-on... Well, hello.
Yes.
Less hands-on now. And we also really nurture the management team. They become autonomous, really. We are there to mentor and support and give guidance, but they make the day-to-day decisions, and so they should.
Was it hard to make that transition?
Absolutely. It was the hardest thing.
How did you cope with that?
I didn't. I hated giving away control. Not that to say I'm a control freak, and I hate that kind of term, but it was my brand, my name, my business. So I wanted to be the voice, but I can't do it all. And there are people that know more about other things than I do too.
Was there a moment, was there a line that you went...
Oh, burnout.
No.
Burnout, totally. Right. Yeah, that was for... The decisions are never easy.
No.
And they probably are forced on me to make the decisions.
So now they've been forced on you. How are you feeling about this mentorship that you're going through?
Great. I think the last one was my third lot of surgery in my hand.
Right.
Where now I really cannot carry plates at all. So this is a new thing.
Yeah.
And I have the only choice I have is to make it.
Sure.
And to kind of work on my business more than being in my business. That is hard, that transition.
What do you think you'll focus on? Like, I say that coming from, as we said before the podcast, like I wasn't able to bake for 12 months in my bakeries. Like, that was very humbling and bloody annoying, you know?
I've got to market. I've got to get more bums on seats and,
sure.
Yeah, keep the momentum. And, yeah. That's the big thing, I think, for me, my next phase.
How do you find the difference between trying to get bums on seats in the Barossa Valley versus in the CBD? Is there a difference, or are you doing the same sort of thing?
The Barossa is a global brand. It is amazing. Its strength and how it's just known globally.
Yep.
It's fine. It's an amazing business. The city's hard, without a doubt. There's a lot of choice. And it's interesting that even though we are a street away from a busy busy precinct,
yes.
Just a street away, it feels like we are a destination dining in Adelaide CBD, which is kind of what you don't want.
Sure.
Or do we want it? I don't know.
Depends what you want to do. Depends what you want to do.
We just want to offer beautiful, a really good experience.
Yeah.
That's, you know, screams of excellence in every way, but really welcoming and relaxed. Yeah. Not hard.
Not hard.
Nah, we
no,
love it.
Not hard to keep that consistent.
It is hard though, you know, because also the other thing is with the differences between the Barossa and the city is staffing.
Of course.
The staff move around more in the city than they do in the Barossa.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Do you share staff between the venues?
Nah, can't, no.
It's too far.
Too far.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
In regards with a produce-driven agenda that you've got with the venues,
yeah.
How do you source that produce?
Well, we use local producers. as much as we can. Mm-hmm. And so in the Barossa, and these small growers will come up to you, ring you and say, like I did, a friend of mine in the Riverland rang me last week and said, I've got some cherries. Do you want some, Sharon? I said, absolutely. So that was a text message and he delivered the next day.
Wow.
So okay. It's kind of, you know, back to relationships and community. It is about we have been in, we've owned restaurants for the last 20 years mm-hmm. and there are relationships that have built on those, you know, and some producers come and go too, which is sad, you know, we're noticing that especially with people growing greens, vegetables, that it's not really sustainable for them. So there are a few gaps in the market.
Sad.
Very sad. Because it's hard to stay in business.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in every line of business.
In every line of business, yeah. And, you know, even with the algal bloom and the seafood, the dire, it's terrible. The algal bloom and the effects it's had on the marine life and then industry.
How are customers relating to that? Are they eating fish?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
There's not a lot to buy.
Right, okay. I see. Okay.
There's not a lot to buy, but we're still getting oysters.
Right.
We've got octopus from Port Lincoln and we've got some Tommy Ruffs from Lincoln as well. So yeah, we have to reassure the guests that it's safe to eat. Of course it's safe. We've bought it.
Yep.
So yep. Yeah, we're okay. We're not buying a lot, but we're still supporting the industry.
Okay.
Absolutely.
From building menus for 20 years, is the formula still the same as when it was 20 years ago, especially now as you've become more mentorship, as you said before? Like, how are you building menus in a produce-driven venue?
As we always have, we design a menu that kind of starts with lighter dishes to more robust. They're more smaller plates than large. Mm-hmm. People have the choice at Fino Vino to do what they want. We have to have a set shared price per person in the Barossa because of the different venue that it is. So it's still shared.
Yep.
It's still kind of designed in the same kind of format. Less is more for us. We really focus on the hero of the dish. So there aren't that too many ingredients. It's not a very the dish isn't busy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can really taste the ingredients.
Sure.
That's always been a thing for us.
Yep.
Really, really important.
Just don't overcomplicate it.
Simplicity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But what I have noticed is that if we had to charge the guests what it really costs, yeah, we wouldn't be busy. That is the truth.
Is the Barossa Valley model more profitable than the city model?
No, we just do more volume.
Right.
Yeah, you can't really charge what it really costs.
Sure.
A guest. That is the truth.
That must be very hard. There's no margin.
Of course it is. Absolutely. And we are working on promotions to get more people to visit us here in the city.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. With your express lunches, for example.
Correct. Yeah.
That must be a hard model to make profitable.
Yes, but you've got to work on volume. So you've got to change your mindset.
Okay.
The more people we have in and see that there's a lot of value.
Yes.
In the experience here.
Yes.
Because $55 isn't a lot of money.
No.
And if you think about it, you know, and if you think about the cost of a main course, it is in line with a pub meal.
Agree. So the thinking is with that express lunch offer, for example, is almost like a branding exercise in order to try and get them in for dinner where you know they're going to spend more per head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they add to it or they return. You know, I'm all about people returning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really important. That's why you're here. And Adelaide, we don't have that population to only see someone once, you know, like you do in other big cities.
Have you thought of going to other big cities?
No.
Because the reason I ask that is I'm really humbled and surprised that a lot of Adelaide brands, once they are successful, like you guys are, that they don't go to Melbourne or Sydney where there is more footfall. Because if you can make a venue work in Adelaide.
Good point.
Then you can make it work with a higher footfall, right?
Yeah.
So have you guys ever thought of doing that, even going to like Yarra Valley or Hunter Valley and doing that kind of model
in a wine region?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No, I haven't, but it is a good question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, have any South Australian brands?
Not really. No.
That's interesting.
Which is really surprising,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Okay. How do you feel the hospitality industry is at the moment? Like, you've been around, obviously, for a long time in this state. What's your gut feel?
Look, and I speak to people, and we all have the kind of same answer. I'm going to ask, you know, how's business? Yeah, it's all right.
Sure. But have you been saying that for 20 years?
No, absolutely not. No. I think the hospitality industry, look, it's interesting. I'm reading about places that have closing or, you know, they're not doing really well. And, you know, we're still here and buoyant. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about the how we're going. I think some venues are... I think we're okay. I think, you know what, in Adelaide or SA, I think we have a lot of smaller venues.
Yes, most definitely. Yep.
So 40-seaters, 60-seaters, I think that's beautiful too.
Yeah.
In fact, I would prefer to dine in a smaller venue too, because I just love the attention to detail and the
attention intimacy you get.
And the attention that you do get. I'm not suggesting that you don't get that in other places, but there are different models.
Yes.
And I guess because I'm so service-driven, when I go out, I want that care and attention. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
that's what you're paying for.
But what's what we all want?
Yeah, yeah, for connection, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want to ever lose that. That's back to your, sorry, and this is going way back to a previous question that you asked me, and my, you know, phasing off the floor. I miss the connection. Because it was really important for me to touch every table,
yep,
in a way.
Yep.
And that, I think, was part of our success because we're such a personable brand. So it's hard then to want to go interstate because would that change who we are? Or
yeah. In a bad way, yeah.
Or, you know, or is it evolving?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know, but I know that connecting is really important to me.
Now that you are in this new stage of mentorship,
yes,
and you are, you know, thinking about these two businesses differently, and I've been in the same situation myself, are you thinking about other ways you can support the industry, like supporting other people going into the industry or other people buying their businesses for the first time so they can deliver on the kind of experience that you've been delivering for such a long time?
I'm willing to explore anything too. And, you know, yeah, I'm willing to explore anything.
Does that give you a bit of excitement?
Yeah,
or is it
does.
Still a bit of dread?
No, less dread.
Good.
Less dread.
Okay.
Look, yeah, I think it will all unfold in the next couple of months and the next year to see where that takes me. But, yeah, I've got a lot more. I've got a lot to give.
Okay.
And, you know, we're talking about mentorship. You know, David and I met, so my restaurant manager, Zuzu, it's really interesting because she's just come on board this year as my restaurant manager. Mm-hmm. And it was her mum and dad's restaurant where David and I met.
Wow.
At South Greece 20 years ago.
Wow.
25 years ago.
Wow. That's full circle.
Isn't it? How awesome is that?
How do you train someone to deliver the Sharon breed of service?
Some things you can't train like that. I think it's how do you train someone like that? Well, for me, it's about care and respect. So, you know, someone said to me, oh, Sharon, I don't like serving people. I said, you're not. You're looking after people. So you've just got to change that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You got to love, I think, a young person or a person that wants to be in front of house is that love of hospitality, front of house service, mm-hmm, looking after a guest, anticipating their needs, watching their body language,
mm-hmm,
And that will give you an indication if they're nervous or they're feeling uptight, just to kind of gauge how you're going to approach the table or that person.
Sure.
And it's about reading people, really. It's a lot of it is about nonverbal communication and reading the guest and then not interrupting, you know, all the things about how you want to be looked after. So I really encourage people to dine out, eat out.
And that just, does that gut feel about when to touch that table, does that just come from experience? Like, you can't really train.
That's the thing.
As a nonverbal cue, right?
Well, no, you can't, but you can watch a table from a distance and kind of show someone where you think they're at or what you think. It is a really hard skill to teach.
Sure.
I don't know about that one.
So when you recruit people, are you just recruiting on personality and people that may be more empathetic or, you know, that kind of way?
Different. I employ, depends on the gaps you have in your staffing. Mm-hmm. So if you need someone with wine knowledge, you've got to kind of focus on filling that role. You also have to kind of do a lot of training in the business always, mm-hmm. always. Just, you know, it could be just, you know, do you know about this wine or do you know about the producer of our oysters and where they're from and why they're so special?
Sure.
So you kind of encourage them to be storytellers because you are kind of telling stories.
Sure.
I think I love employing young people because I love their energy.
Have you had to engage with them differently over those 20 years?
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, but you just work with that. It's not something you've noticed.
Yeah. I have great love for the young generation and they're great workers and they care and they want to learn and they've got different ways of learning too.
Do you hate when people say the opposite? Because that's a very positive response and a lot of people would say, oh, they're lazy or they look on their phones too much or some bullshit. Like,
oh, well, you know, you've got to set some boundaries.
Yes,
with the phones. Like, you know, we say no phones, but they're all in their back pockets.
Yeah.
But I don't see them like that.
Yes.
So as soon as I acknowledge or I witness that, you know, that's a distraction, then you have to address it.
Yes.
You let them be who they are. I let everyone have their own personality. That's really, really important. I don't want robots.
Yes. No one wants robots.
But they know their rights more.
Yep.
Yep. I didn't.
Yeah, which is a good thing, right?
I love it. Yeah. They know they set boundaries and very firm boundaries and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
At all. Do you think there's something
No, I think it's fantastic. I think it's been enlightening for me. Like especially when we're recruiting people, when we're placing people in certain roles and they're saying, I want this, this, and this. And I'm like, okay. I never heard that when I was I never voiced that.
No, I never voiced it either.
And that's a new thing for me to get my head around.
It's not bad, is it?
But then I go, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome that's happening now. And we have to change with that.
And always employ for attitude, train for skill.
100%.
That is so important to me. They're not gonna know everything. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I don't either. And what does the guest want also?
Yes, absolutely.
Do we think that, you know, if you don't consistently top up water, it's going to upset the guest? Probably not.
Yeah.
So I've kind of let a lot of things kind of go because it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a very high achiever and I really strive for excellence.
Sure.
I personally, in my life.
Yes.
And I have changed that I don't have those expectations anymore on my team.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yep. But it's really refreshing.
Yep.
It lightens you.
Yep.
Yeah. It is. The rest is no joy.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and I don't want to become that kind of cynical business owner that's gone, oh, business is shit, it's been really tough.
Yeah.
You know, no, I still love it. And I think if you don't smile through it, you're not going to get through it.
I love that.
But it's truth.
It is true.
It is. And at the end of the day, whether you realise it or not, your team are looking at you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the buck stops with us also.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
You can only control the culture yourself, right?
Absolutely.
What's the smallest operational change you've made in the business that's created the biggest impact?
Recently or?
Anytime.
Well, point of sale, number one, we used to have docker books at Fino in Wollonga.
Sure.
Amazing. You get reporting.
Do you look at that reporting?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yep, I look at analytics.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely do.
How often?
Oh.
Like daily or
not
weekly?
Daily,
or?
No. Not weekly or okay. Fortnightly, yeah.
And what do you look at? What kind of data do you look
at? I look at what sells, what doesn't sell.
Yep.
Average ticket, that kind of stuff?
I know the headspin's great here, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I do always look at the figures and, where we can be better or what's missing or what wines are selling or beverages are selling and, the ones that don't, why and, so that's always a big thing. A glass washer where you don't have to polish glasses. Life changed.
Oh, of course. Do you have one for cutlery as well?
Well, this is the thing.
Because I've seen that before.
I bought tarnished cutlery.
Right.
So it doesn't have a shine.
Oh, well, they're perfect.
So we don't polish cutlery or glassware here.
Wow, winning.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's nothing that shits me off more than watching people polish cutlery, old glasses, and chatting and not being focused.
Yes.
Because just, and then they come off the floor and they lose touch with the guest. And I don't like that at all. So eliminate.
Yep.
And no one likes polishing cutlery and glasses.
No.
That leaves you more time to.
Yeah, that was the best decision.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
I love that.
My last question to you is, what is next for Fino Vino as a brand? What is next for you? Maybe you're in an exploration stage of that for yourself.
I can't answer that yet because I don't know. But I know that I have a personality that is of service. I know I've got a lot to give, and I know that I love this industry. So, I think I'm open to anything. Fino brand still going strong. I think we need to regroup and see where our next phase takes us.
Would you do a third restaurant?
Highly unlikely.
Sure. Yeah. Just the pressure, you think?
Just,
that's a lot to go to three, right?
Yeah, I just don't know if I want to anymore.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
But with like events or pop-ups or those kind of things that you see other brands doing, like would you do that? Because obviously you've got such a strong brand.
Yeah, I guess I'm open to anything, yeah. Cool. Like I'm not done.
That's exciting.
I'm not done at all. But I don't know if David and I or the Fino brand would explore a third venue.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
The last thing I want to say to you, I'm glad I can say this in a public forum. So my partner Diane and I have been to Seppertfield first, actually, and we got served by you.
Oh, right.
And was blown away, right? Was blown away. Actually made our visit to the Brossa. And then we came here. I think we've been here twice. But I think, both times served by you.
Really? Okay.
Absolutely.
Great.
And you were the first person we actually saw. And because we saw you at the Brossa, and I remember seeing you here, and I was like, we're going to be looked after.
Yeah, that's nice.
And you did. And it actually makes me emotional because I hope you realise that people like you are hospitality. And not only for guests that don't work in the industry, you deliver great experiences for, but also ones that do, because then you've reminded me why I'm in it. It's great hospitality that reminds me why I'm in it for 30-odd years. So thank you for the delivery of amazing experiences.
That's very sweet. Thank you. It's taken me a long time to sit back and go, actually, wow, I've done okay. I've achieved so much.
Yes.
And I'm just, it's great that I've made such an impact on you and your partner, because I don't think it's hard.
Yep. And that's what makes it so good?
Yeah, you think? I hope so.
That's what makes it so good. thanks for coming on the podcast and for hosting us here today, Sharon.
Thanks for coming. I really appreciate it. Lovely to meet you again. Thank you.
Today's episode of the Ingredients Podcast is brought to you by Tanda, helping the best venues stay ahead. So if you run a great venue but also want to stay compliant at the same time, reach out to the Tanda team at hospitality@tanda.com.au. The links are in the show notes of this podcast. Hope you enjoy the episode.